The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, November 2019, Volume 20, Number 10. And this is the third of five installments of the November issue. On this month's cover, Oprah wears a black form-fitting, button-front, low V-neck sweater dress. Her hair is long and smooth, and she wears polished, natural golden and black stone teardrop-shaped earrings. This month's headlines are A Cure for Loneliness, My All-Time Favorite Turkey Recipes, and I'm Sharing One of the Most Joyful Experiences of My Life. And we'll start out with, from the Let's Eat section of the magazine, What's Cooking? Pancakes from on high. Meredith Erickson, author of Alpine Cooking, elevates a beloved breakfast to royal status. Of all the sweet treats in Austria, Kaiserschmarrn reigns supreme. It translates to Emperor's Mess. It was a favorite of Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph I, and while writing my new book about the best recipes from the Alps, I must have tasted hundreds of versions of the fluffy, shredded pancakes in a small refugio mountain hut at 12,000 feet, in a grand hotel in Salzburg, even in the back of a motorhome in Tyrol. The dish requires only simple staples, flour, milk, butter, eggs, as fresh produce is hard to come by in the remote mountain range. But that's a lesson in life as much as in food. Limitation can lead to purity, clarity of thought, and in this case, a whole lot of rustic deliciousness. And they're showing a bowl here of these pancakes that are in bits, and so they're nice and brown and crunchy, it looks like, in places. There are two little pots for fruit preserves, and a generous amount of confectioner's sugar has been sprinkled over the top. And here's the recipe for Kaiserschmarrn. This makes two servings with a total time of 40 minutes. And here are the ingredients. 1 cup all-purpose flour sifted, 1 cup of whole milk, 3 eggs, 1/4 cup of unsalted butter melted, sea salt, 1/4 cup grape seed oil, confectioner's sugar for sprinkling, 2 tables of rum, optional, apple or cranberry jam for serving. And here are the instructions. In a large bowl, combine flour, milk, eggs, butter, and a pinch of salt. Whisk well into a loose batter. Let rest at room temperature for 20 to 30 minutes. In a large skillet, preferably cast iron, over medium heat, warm grapeseed oil until shimmering. Pour in batter and let sit untouched until slightly brown on the bottom, 2 to 3 minutes. Using a spatula, flip pancake and continue to cook until other side is brown, about 2 minutes. Using 2 forks and working directly in the pan, coarsely cut the pancake into 1-inch to 2-inch pieces. Sprinkle liberally with confectioner's sugar. If desired, splash rum onto pancake and set the pan aflame, a traditional Austrian move. Once fire subsides, serve pancake warm in its pan with jam. And on a little inset here on top of the picture, it says you can easily tweak the taste and texture of this snow-capped treat by adding thin apple slices, raisins, or finely grated lemon zest to the batter. And now we'll move over to the reading room. And the first review is entitled Being Mortal. Elizabeth Strout revisits an iconic character in her ravishing new novel. Olive Kitteridge, like kissing a barnacle-covered whale. And that's a quote. Few writers would dare to characterize their heroines in such bluntly unsentimental terms, the more startling in that this unromantic remark is made by 74-year-old widower Jack, who is attracted to Olive and hopes to marry her. Indeed, in Olive Again, the sequel to Strout's Pulitzer Prize-winning Olive Kitteridge. Olive is now a much older woman, though still with a fiercely intransigent nature that is both cantankerous and kindly. We wince at Olive's rudeness at times. Probably we would not want to be a relative of hers, risking her sharp tongue. Yet that abrasiveness is conjoined with integrity and compassion. Olive, again, is a modestly self-effacing title for these 13 vividly realized interlocking tales, shaped into a novel in the mode of Sherwood Anderson's classic, Winesburg, Ohio, and Alice Munro's The Beggar Maid, exploring the claustrophobia and loneliness of small-town life. Olive is the protagonist in some stories and a background presence in others, providing moral support and sympathy for girls and women who find themselves emotionally isolated. In both Olive novels, Strout has created a wonderfully eccentric Maynor who verges, like most eccentrics, on self-parody, yet emerges finally as endearing, even beloved. In one of the more comic chapters, Olive reveals herself to be a reluctant grandmother who fails to provide proper food for visiting grandchildren and can't strike the right note with her daughter-in-law. As a mother, she frets that her adult son, Christopher, doesn't seem to love her while she behaves coldly toward him and dislikes his stepchildren. Yet Olive struggles to figure herself out and has an urgent need for a summing up. Quote, "But it was almost over, after all, her life. It swelled behind her like a sardine fishing net, all sorts of useless seaweed and broken bits of shells and the tiny shining fish, the billion streaks of emotion she'd had as she'd looked at sunrises, sunsets, all of it gone or about to go." End of quote. Toward the end of the book, Olive feels a compulsion to acquire a typewriter and write, as if emulating her creator. She has demonstrated virtually no intellectual, cultural, or literary interests until now, unusual in an educated person who'd been an educator. But suddenly, Olive is suffused with a need to express herself. Among the things she types is, quote, "I do not have a clue who I have been. Truthfully, I do not understand a thing," end of quote. It's a paradox that Strout's many admiring readers will grasp intuitively. Though we may not know who we are, we can come to an appreciation of ourselves that bypasses knowledge through our relationships with others. And that review of Olive, again, by Elizabeth Strout, was written by none other than Joyce Carol Oates. The next review is entitled Aiding and Abetting. In an intoxicating new memoir, Adrienne Brodeur reveals the secrets and lies she shared with her mother. Readers of Wild Game, take heed. You're about to enter an alternate universe in which roadkill is transformed into gourmet fare, and a woman named Malabar wakes her 14-year-old daughter, Adrienne, a.k.a. Rennie, in the middle of the night to swoon over the object of her passion, her husband's best friend, Ben. Outrageously, the lovers conduct their affair in plain sight. Ben plants a kiss on Malabar in full view of his wife, who laughs it off. Somehow, she trusts them, as does Malabar's husband, Rennie's stepfather, Charles. The main casualty of their liaison is Rennie, whom Malabar conscripts as an accomplice in a clandestine campaign to keep the affair alive. At first, Rennie is ecstatic, quote, "thrilled to have landed a starring role," end of quote, in the drama. It's only after years of shared intrigue that she realizes how much her participation in the deception has wounded her and others. The romance begins when Ben gifts Malabar a bloody bag of birds, squabs to be exact. The fowl allow Malabar a la Cordon Bleu, trained foodie expert, quote, at extracting all things comestible from any creature, end of quote, to show off her culinary skills. Ben understands her primal relationship with food and always brings her, quote, something unexpected, green frogs from his pond, or a squirrel that he'd hit in his rush to get to us, end of quote. Malabar is as unique and wild as the exotic dishes she concocts. She confides to Rennie, quote, normal is not something I've ever aspired to be, end of quote. Though her mother could make for an easy target, Brodeur never resorts to simplistic judgments, even when describing the multiple ways in which Malabar's devotion to her paramour exceeded her commitment to her daughter. Brodeur is a deft memoirist, portraying Malabar as a woman traumatized by a violent parent and early tragedy. In this stunning tale of treachery, unsettling yet seductive, we are led through some of the darkest and most alluring corridors of the human heart. And next we have a review of the book by Zadie Smith called Grand Union. The review is entitled Global Citizen. A fearless fiction writer and critic delivers a dazzling debut volume of stories. 19 years ago, White Teeth announced the arrival of Zadie Smith as a turn-of-the-century wunderkind. She has since released 4 more highly praised novels and 2 books of essays, establishing herself as an intellectual writer in the best sense. Burrowing into complexity, seeking it out, raising suspicion about situations where it appears absent. Now her first-ever story collection, Grand Union, offers yet another kaleidoscopic display of her singular sophistication. In these stories, more than half of them previously unpublished, Smith's compositions, rife with ambivalence, in love with ideas, witty and mordant, echo in the head long after the last word. Take Monica, the brainy young heroine of Sentimental Education, who betrays her friend for his own benefit, or so she thinks. Sleeps with 3 people in 12 hours, and most dramatically of all, plummets into the chasm between her theories and real life. Monica concludes, quote, there were people to whom you wanted to abase yourself and people you wanted to abase. There were people you wanted to meet on a flat playing field, which was called love, for capitalism's and convenience's sake, end of quote. Some of Smith's most exciting tales feature partial avatars of the author herself, such as the narrator of The Gorgeous Downtown, an ode to art, blackness, and New York City, with the Brett Kavanaugh hearings haunting the background. As a whole, Grand Union stands as a glittering affirmation of Smith's virtuosity and range, and because she is such a generous and penetrating observer of the world, one keeps turning the pages and exclaiming with recognition, oh, there we are, there we are, there we are, there we are. And one more thing on this page, we have a quote from Leave Something on the Table by Frank Bennick, Hearst Executive Vice Chairman. And here's the quote. I believe there is one unchanging North Star. It isn't what you know and how hard you work and how clever you are. It's not even who you are. It's how other people know you. It's who you are. And now let's get ready for some Thanksgiving recipes. And this is part of the special feature this month in the first page. The first 2 pages are a spread with, we're looking down at a table with a really large, gorgeous, dark, crispy turkey. It's just glistening. And it is a smoker turkey. It's on a large white platter, and it has sprigs of fresh herbs around it. And that platter is on top of a dark, just about as dark as you can imagine, teal or forest green tablecloth. And there's a bowl of roasted vegetables. And there's a salad that has apples and walnuts and green, some kind of green leaves. We'll turn the page and find out what's in there. Then we have pink grapefruit slices and cranberries in another bowl. Do the Thanksgiving twist. We've gathered just the right number of cooks in our kitchen, from star chefs and foodies to a beloved blogger and baker, to serve up recipe tweaks that'll upgrade your meal. The meat tenderizing technique, Oprah's chef swears by, a nutty alternative to pumpkin pie, Chrissy Teigen's so simple dish that gives glorious new meaning to mashed potatoes. Consider your table set. Chef Kenny's smoked turkey. As Oprah says, this full-flavored fowl is melt-in-your-mouth tender straight from the smoker, and every bit is incredible in sandwiches the next day. Plus, mayo-based marinade is a recipe for the crispiest golden skin, and a medley of earthy root vegetables is a fresher sidekick than stuffing. No wonder the O of O asks Chef Kenny Gilbert to make it for her loved ones every year. Chef Kenny Gilbert has a quote here on this page. Thanksgiving isn't complete without watching the original King Kong movie, playing several games of spades, and having plenty of libations. And now let's hear how Chef Kenny prepares this smoked turkey. From Kenny Gilbert, one of Oprah's go-to chefs and owner of modern barbecue spot Gilbert Social in Jacksonville, Florida. This makes 10 to 15 servings with a total time of 4 to 5 hours plus 3 days for brining. And here are the ingredients. 3 cups of fresh lemon juice, 4 cups of buttermilk, 1 cup plus 1 tablespoon Chef Kenny's fried chicken seasoning, $7 at chefkennygilbert.com, divided, or a half a cup plus a half a tablespoon adobo seasoning and a half a cup plus a half a tablespoon ground mustard, divided. 1 1/4 cups of kosher salt, 1 large turkey, 10 to 20 pounds, a half a cup of mayonnaise, 1 tablespoon dried sage, 1 tablespoon dried parsley, 1 tablespoon dried rosemary, ground black pepper, 3 large carrots diced, 4 stalks of celery diced, 1 onion halved, skin on, 1 rutabaga cut in large chunks, 1 large turnip cut in large chunks, 2 sprigs of sage, leaves removed, 2 sprigs of rosemary, leaves removed, 2 sticks of butter cut in small chunks. And here are the instructions. Combine 2 gallons of water, lemon juice, buttermilk, 1 cup, fried chicken seasoning, or adobo and mustard, and the small salt. Submerge the turkey in mixture inside a large brining bag or a 5-gallon container and brine in refrigerator for 3 days. Preheat smoker until it reaches 250 degrees, preferably using oak wood. Smoke turkey until thermometer inserted into thickest part of thigh reads 145 degrees. That's 2 to 3 hours. If using an oven, roast in a roasting pan at 275 degrees for 2 to 3 hours until internal temperature reaches 145 degrees. Meanwhile, make marinade by combining mayo, remaining 1 tablespoon of chicken seasoning, or a half a tablespoon of adobo and a half a tablespoon of mustard, and dried sage, parsley, and rosemary. Remove turkey from smoker and place root vegetables in bottom of roasting pan. If using an oven, remove turkey from pan before adding vegetables. Scatter with salt and pepper, sage, rosemary, and butter. Place turkey on top of vegetables and coat skin with a thin, even layer of marinade. Finish in 275 degree oven until internal temperature reaches 155 degrees, about an hour. Remove and allow to cool slightly before carving and serving. And there's a footnote here, slow and steady. All deliciousness isn't lost if you don't have a smoker. In step one of this recipe, just roast your bird in the oven at 275 degrees for 2 to 3 hours until the internal temperature reaches 145 degrees. You won't get the same woody flavor, but low heat cooking will still produce ultra-tender turkey. Now, our next recipe is for autumn harvest salad from Tegan Gerard, the blogger behind Half-Baked Harvest and author of the new cookbook, Half-Baked Harvest Super Simple. This makes 6 servings for a total time of 35 minutes. And here are the ingredients. 1 cup of raw pecans, 1/3 cup plus 1 tablespoon extra virgin olive oil divided, 3 tablespoons of maple syrup, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, kosher salt, 3 ounces prosciutto, thinly sliced, 2 bunches of Tuscan kale, stemmed and shredded, 1 small shallot, thinly sliced, 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, 1 tablespoon of apple butter, 1 tablespoon of fresh thyme leaves, pinch of crushed red pepper flakes, ground black pepper, 3 pears or persimmons, thinly sliced, seeds from 1 pomegranate, 1/2 cup of crumbled blue or goat cheese. And here are the instructions. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. On a parchment-lined baking sheet, toss together pecans, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, maple syrup, cinnamon, and a pinch of salt. Arrange in an even layer in center of sheet. Lay prosciutto around pecans and bake until nuts are toasted and prosciutto is crisp, 10 to 15 minutes. Meanwhile, place kale in a large bowl. To make vinaigrette, in a medium skillet, heat 1/3 cup of olive oil over high heat until shimmering. Add shallots and cook until fragrant, 2 to 3 minutes. Remove from the heat and let shallots cool slightly. Add vinegar, apple butter, thyme, crushed red pepper, and salt and pepper to taste. Stir to combine and warm through about 1 minute. Pour 1/2 the warm vinaigrette over kale and massage with your hands until leaves feel softened, about 1 minute. Add pears or persimmons, pomegranate seeds, and remaining vinaigrette and toss to combine. Lightly break the prosciutto into pieces and place on top of salad along with toasted pecans and cheese and serve immediately. And now here's our next recipe, cranberries with Campari and grapefruit. From celebrity chef Bobby Flay's latest book, Bobby at Home. This makes 6 to 8 servings with a total time of 35 minutes. Here are the ingredients. 2 tablespoons of canola oil, 1 small red onion finely diced, 2 tablespoons finely grated fresh ginger, 1 cup fresh orange juice, 1 cup fresh red grapefruit juice, 3/4 cup cane sugar plus more if needed. 1 pound fresh or frozen cranberries, not thawed if frozen. 2 tablespoons of Campari, 2 red grapefruits segmented, 2 teaspoons finely grated orange zest, kosher salt, ground black pepper, fresh flat leaf parsley leaves chopped for garnish. And here are the instructions. In a medium saucepan, heat oil over medium heat. Add onion and ginger and cook until onion is soft, about 5 minutes. Add orange and grapefruit juices and sugar and bring to a boil. Cook until sugar has melted and mixture has reduced slightly, about 8 minutes. Stir in 1/2 the cranberries and cook, stirring occasionally, until berries pop and break down and mixture begins to thicken, about 10 minutes. Add remaining cranberries and Campari and cook just until berries pop, about 5 minutes. Remove from heat, stir in grapefruit segments and orange zest, and season lightly with salt and pepper. Transfer to a bowl, stir in parsley, and serve at room temperature. You can make the relish up to 2 days in advance and serve cold or at room temperature. We have a quote here from Tegan Gerard, and this chef's response to Thanksgiving isn't complete without is, quote, "All 7 of my siblings and our parents. We always get the family Christmas tree before dinner. My mom makes us hike up a mountain, find the biggest one, cut it down, and drag it home." And Bobby Flay says Thanksgiving isn't complete without taking a moment to recognize the people in need around the world. Gratitude for your meal makes it so much sweeter. We have three more recipes. We are still looking down at this deliciously set table, and the next recipe is for mustardy green beans with anchovied walnuts. And this is a very light, almost a salad-looking way of serving the green beans. And here's what they say in a footnote. Chopped nuts and bits of briny fish deliver the crunch and umami you expect from a green bean casserole topping, while an olive oil dressing replaces the cream of mushroom soup. The tweaks create a lighter, brighter version of the standard side. From Allison Roman, New York Times food writer and author of Nothing Fancy. This makes 4 to 6 servings for a total time of 45 minutes. And here are the ingredients. 1 cup of walnuts, coarsely chopped. 4 anchovy fillets, finely chopped. 1 garlic clove, finely grated. 1/4 cup plus 2 tablespoons of olive oil plus more for drizzling. Kosher salt, freshly ground black pepper. 1.5 pounds fresh green beans trimmed. 1 lemon thinly sliced in rounds, sieved, removed. 1 tablespoon whole grain mustard. 1 tablespoon distilled white vinegar or white wine vinegar. And 1/4 cup of fresh dill finely chopped. And here are the instructions. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. On a baking sheet, toast walnuts until golden brown and fragrant, 6 to 8 minutes. Immediately transfer to a medium bowl and add anchovies, garlic, and 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Season with salt and pepper to taste and toss to coat and set aside. Increase oven to 450 degrees. On a rimmed baking sheet, toss green beans and lemon with enough olive oil to lightly coat. Season with salt and pepper. Roast, tossing green beans once or twice until they've started to char and brown in spots, 12 to 15 minutes. Meanwhile, combine mustard, vinegar, and 1/4 cup olive oil in a large bowl and season with salt and pepper. Once green beans are done, add them to the dressing and toss to coat. Transfer to a large serving platter and top with anchovied walnuts and oil. And now the next recipe is crispy potato smashies from Cravings, Hungry for More by famously funny foodie Chrissy Teigen. This makes 6 servings with a total time of 50 minutes. The ingredients are 1.5 pounds baby potatoes, 16 to 24 potatoes, the smallest you can find, 1/4 cup olive oil, 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper or more to taste, 2 tablespoons chopped fresh flat leaf parsley. And here are the instructions. Preheat oven to 425 degrees. If using an electric oven, see Power Moves below. Well, let's read Power Moves. If using an electric oven, position rack as close to the heating coil as possible and preheat to 425 degrees. Microwave and smash potatoes as directed. Place a large rimmed baking sheet in oven and heat until water sizzles when sprinkled on the surface about 5 minutes. Before removing and adding oil, salt, pepper, then potatoes, roast and serve as directed. Okay, let's read the other instructions again. Preheat oven to 425 degrees. Place potatoes in a large microwave-safe bowl and fill with 1/2 inch of water. Cover with plastic wrap and poke a few times with a fork. Microwave on high for 15 to 20 minutes until potatoes can be easily pierced with a fork. Check after 10 minutes. If they're still hard, cook for another 5 and so on, replenishing water if necessary. Remove, uncover, drain well, and cool until just warm. Using the heel of your hand, gently smash potatoes into rounds. Pour oil onto a large rimmed baking sheet and sprinkle with 3/4 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of pepper. Arrange potatoes on sheet and sprinkle tops with remaining 3/4 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of pepper. Place sheet on floor of the oven and roast until undersides are crispy but not burned, 10 to 15 minutes. Remove from oven, flip potatoes, then return to oven and roast until undersides are crispy, another 10 to 15 minutes. Remove from oven, transfer to a serving platter, and garnish with parsley. And we have a couple of quotes here. Allison Roman, who gave us the mustardy green beans with anchovied walnuts, says, "Thanksgiving wouldn't be complete without forcing my family to play some sort of game after we've had dinner and too much wine. Charades, taboo, celebrity. If I can win it, I'll convince everyone it's a good idea to play it." And then from Chrissy Teigen, "Thanksgiving isn't complete without me falling asleep before dinner is served. I begin prepping the night before and get started early on Thanksgiving morning. So by dinner time, I need a nap. Luckily, my husband John is always happy to set the table." And now our final recipe is cardamom tahini squash pie from Lisa Lidwinski, owner of the Sister Pie Boutique Bakery in Detroit, and author of Sister Pie. And in a little footnote, it says, "Piece of pie. Yes, this recipe is lengthy, but fret not. You can make the dough, tahini walnut paste, cardamom cream, and winter squash up to 2 days in advance and store in the fridge. This makes 1 9-inch pie, total time 4 hours, plus 2 plus hours for chilling. For the pie crust, 1 1/4 cups all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of granulated sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, 8 tablespoons, 1 stick of unsalted butter straight from the fridge, 1/2 tablespoon apple cider vinegar, 1 1/2 pounds dried beans or use pastry weights, and 1 large egg beaten. So let's look at the first 8 steps of the instructions, which are about making the pie crust. Fill a measuring cup with about 1/4 cup of water and freeze completely. In a large stainless steel bowl, combine flour, sugar, and salt and stir to mix well. Add butter and coat on all sides with flour mixture, then cut into 1/2-inch cubes with a bench scraper. Work quickly to separate cubes with your hands until they're all lightly coated in flour. Cut each cube in half with the bench scraper. Add apple cider vinegar to the frozen water and set aside on the counter. Using a pastry blender, cut butter with one hand while turning bowl with the other, being careful to not hit the same spot with each stroke of the blender. When blender clogs, clean it with a butter knife, then toss ingredients a bit with your hands. Continue blending and turning until largest pieces are the size and shape of peas, and remaining mixture resembles Parmesan cheese from a canister. Add 1/4 cup water-vinegar mixture all at once. With bench scraper, scrape as much of the mixture as possible from one side of the bowl to the other until there are no pools of liquid. Using your hands, scoop up as much of the mixture as you can and use the tips of your fingers and a lot of pressure to press it back down into remaining ingredients. Rotate bowl 1/4 turn and repeat. Continue scooping, pressing, and turning until the mixture forms 1 cohesive mass, remembering to incorporate any dry, floury bits at the bottom of the bowl along the way. Place dough on a lightly floured surface and gently pat into a 2-inch thick disc, working quickly to seal any broken edges before wrapping tightly in a double layer of plastic wrap. Refrigerate dough for at least 2 hours, or ideally overnight. You can store in fridge for up to 2 days. Lightly flour a work surface and place unwrapped dough in the center. Using a rolling pin, bang across dough from left to right about 4 times. Rotate 180 degrees and bang from left to right once more. Use 1 tapered end of pin to press and roll along the edge of the round, enlarging the circle. After each press of the edge, rotate disc 45 degrees clockwise. Place rolling pin in center of dough and roll away from yourself, applying pressure, being careful to stop about 1 inch away from the edge. Rotate disc 45 degrees and roll again. Continue rolling and rotating until you have a 12-inch to 13-inch circle. Gently run your rolling pin over the entirety of the dough to ensure even thickness. Invert pie dish onto the circle. Using a pastry cutter or knife, cut a circle around the dish that's 2.5 inches to 3 inches larger than the dish. Remove the dish and turn right side up on work surface. Fold dough circle in half and place in one side of dish. Unfold other half and gently press dough to fit it snugly into dish. Crimp edges, then freeze for at least 15 minutes. Preheat oven to 450 degrees with rack on lowest level. Remove crust from freezer, tear off a square of aluminum foil slightly larger than pie shell, and gently fit it into crust, covering crimps. Fill with dried beans or pastry weights. They should come all the way up to the crimps. And place pan on a baking sheet and transfer to oven. Bake for 25 to 27 minutes until crimps are light golden brown. Remove sheet from oven, fold back foil, exposing crimps, and keep beans in center of dish. Brush crimps with a beaten egg and place sheet back in oven for 5 to 7 minutes, or until crust turns a deep golden brown. Remove from oven and transfer to cooling rack. After 6 minutes, carefully remove the foil and beans. And now, let's look at the ingredients for this cardamom tahini squash pie. They are 2 pounds of butternut, Hubbard, buttercup, or acorn squash, or a mixture. 2 tablespoons, 1/4 stick, unsalted butter melted. 2 tablespoons, light brown sugar, packed. 1/2 cup, canned pumpkin. 1 cup, heavy cream. 1 tablespoon, whole cardamom pods. 1/2 cup, packed light brown sugar. 1/2 teaspoon, ground cinnamon. 1/2 teaspoon, ground cardamom. 1/2 teaspoon, ground ginger. 1/2 teaspoon, ground allspice. 1 tablespoon, fine yellow cornmeal. 1 teaspoon, kosher salt. 3 large eggs at room temperature. 1 teaspoon, vanilla extract. For the tahini walnut paste, 5 tablespoons, finely ground toasted walnuts. 2.5 tablespoons, tahini plus more for drizzling. 2.5 tablespoons, light brown sugar, packed. 2.5 tablespoons, cream cheese at room temperature. 1/4 teaspoon, kosher salt. And for the topping, 1 teaspoon, toasted sesame seeds, and whipped cream for serving. And here are some golden rules. To toast walnuts and sesame seeds, add to a dry skillet over medium heat or bake on a sheet at 350 degrees until lightly browned. Cool walnuts before grinding. And now, let's make the pie. Preheat oven to 400 degrees. To make the filling, line a baking sheet with parchment paper. Have squash with a sharp knife and hollow out seedy center with a spoon. Place squash on sheet, cut sides up, brush generously with melted butter, and sprinkle evenly with brown sugar. Bake for 1 hour until flesh is soft and cooked through, then cool on a wire rack. Peel skin and add flesh to a food processor with pumpkin. Blend until well incorporated. Measure out 1.5 cups and reserve the rest if desired. If making in advance, let squash come to room temperature before using. In a small saucepan, bring cream to a gentle simmer. Remove from heat, add cardamom pods, and cover tightly with plastic wrap or a lid. Steep for 20 minutes, then remove and discard pods. Let cool to room temperature. In a large mixing bowl, whisk brown sugar, cinnamon, ground cardamom, ginger, allspice, cornmeal, and salt. In a medium bowl, combine eggs with cardamom cream, 1.5 cups squash puree, and vanilla, and whisk until smooth. Slowly pour egg mixture into brown sugar mixture and whisk until combined. To make tahini walnut paste, clean bowl of food processor and add walnuts, tahini, brown sugar, cream cheese, and salt. Blend until smooth. If making in advance, let come to room temperature before using. To make the pie, preheat oven to 325 degrees and line a baking sheet with parchment paper. Evenly spread tahini walnut paste on the bottom of crust and use your fingers or the bottom of a measuring cup to pat it down. Pour squash filling into pie shell until it reaches the bottom of the crimps. Place pie on sheet and transfer to oven and bake for 40 to 50 minutes until edges are puffed and center jiggles only slightly when shaken. Remove from oven and cool on a wire rack until room temperature, 4 to 6 hours. Sprinkle sesame seeds on top and slice into 6 to 8 pieces. Serve with cold, freshly whipped cream and a drizzle of tahini. Store leftovers well wrapped in plastic wrap in the refrigerator for up to 2 days. And with the picture of this pie, we have this note. Changing up the squash with varieties like the nutty acorn or the syrupy sweet buttercup fills your pie with more complex tastes than a purely pumpkin treat ever could. And a bottom layer of rich tahini walnut paste and a sprinkling of barely bitter sesame seeds. And you've got the makings of a prized pastry. And I'll apologize for my difficulties in reading today. Much of the text is on top of dark and varied backgrounds. And now we have a quote, our final quote here in this spread of Thanksgiving recipes is from the chef who gave us this pie, Lisa Lidwinski, who says that Thanksgiving isn't complete without a rousing ping pong championship in the basement after turkey and before pie. The most recent addition to the scene is my pit bull Ruby racing from one end of the table to the other, trying to nab any stray balls. Let's go from recipes to finishing up the feeling good section of the magazine, the health news, which we started in the last installment. And this article is entitled The Greatest Love of All. What's the first step in making things work with someone else? Showing up as yourself. In her early 20s, Mary Joy aspired to be a female Jimmy Buffett, a free-spirited Florida singer-songwriter of beach pop and love ballads. When she was 27, Joy moved to Nashville to try to land a music deal. There she met a deep-voiced, smooth-talking urban cowboy, a record producer who swept her off her feet and set a Stetson atop her sun-streaked hair. Smitten, Joy swapped her flip-flops for cowboy boots and took her place beside him at rodeos, even though she secretly found them cruel. At his urging, she started singing soulful, countryfied songs. She says now, quote, "I was a fish out of water, almost literally. I'd spent all my life in the ocean, and suddenly I was on horseback," end of quote. Joy felt like the relationship was eroding her personality, yet 2 years after meeting the older, controlling man, she married him. From there, she grew steadily more anxious and less self-assured, saying, quote, "I don't get depressed easily, but I was very, very sad," end of quote. Joy's experience is a textbook example of what can happen when we sacrifice our authentic self to accommodate a lover. Consider the types of self-reflective questions that Amy Brunel, PhD, an associate professor of psychology at Ohio State University, uses to evaluate whether someone is being genuine with their significant other, and imagine how Joy might have replied. And here's a list of these questions. Are you acting according to your values, needs, and preferences, or simply to please others, get rewards, or avoid negative consequences? Are you striving for openness and honesty in intimate relationships with the goal of having others know who you are? And do you have self-awareness, self-acceptance? It's worth noting that a person can feel very authentic, somewhat, a little, and not at all. Brunel's research shows that the truer to yourself you are with your partner, the more likely you are to enjoy both a healthy relationship and personal happiness. On the flip side, studies and experiences such as Joy's show that feeling inauthentic in a relationship can result in depressive symptoms, low self-esteem, and poorer emotional well-being. This sounds logical. Of course we want to be genuine with the person who shares our most private moments, and yet romance and authenticity don't always make comfy bedfellows. In the initial rush of infatuation, we may subsume our needs to those of our beloved, In a long-term partnership, when two become one, it's all too easy to let our desires get muddled with our partner's. Eventually, we may even start to mask our true feelings, not just from the other person, but from ourselves. Brunel says, quote, "There may be some unconscious self-deception," end of quote. After 19 years, Joy felt like she just couldn't fake it any longer, and she left the marriage. She started seeing someone new, but it wasn't a good fit. Joy realized she needed to get reacquainted with herself. She says, quote, "I didn't date for the next 4 years. Then one day I made a list of everything I wanted in a mate: compassion, kindness, spirituality, a love of travel, and the ocean. And I realized that the person I was describing was me." End of quote. It's a funny thing about romance and realness. Though we often think true love means finding someone who accepts us warts and all, we may actually feel more understood by a person who shares our belief in our potential, found Serena Chen, PhD, a professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, and co-author of a series of studies on authenticity in relationships. Your partner sees you as you want to be seen, treats you as that person, and in what other social science researchers have dubbed the Michelangelo phenomenon, helps sculpt you into your ideal. It sounds like that might be exactly what's happening for Joy right now. She moved back to Florida, settled in a condo near the beach, and adopted two rescue dogs. And she met a pilot who loved spending time with her and on the water. A few years ago, she left the pilot at home for 3 weeks to travel around Europe by herself. She says, quote, "I'd always wanted to do this, but when the time came, I was terrified. Boarding the plane, I was scared. Landing, I was still scared. When I got to Venice, I finally asked myself, what am I really afraid of? And I realized it was a deep-seated fear of abandonment that I'd developed when I was with my ex. But I wasn't with him anymore, so I decided to leave my fears right there. In my life now, I feel like I'm finally being me." End of quote. And our last article in Feeling Good is Health Heroes, the Milk of Human Kindness. For babies in need, this all-female motorcycle club goes the distance. The members of the Sirens Women's Motorcycle Club in New York City range in age from 25 to 76, work in professions from elementary school teacher to electrical engineer, and are as racially and culturally diverse as the city they live in. What bonds them is their passion for bikes. The 66 members have more than 100 between them, and their idea of fun involves riding upstate, taking as many scenic roads as possible. And while giving back, donating clothes to women's shelters, collecting toys for kids, has always been a shared priority. Saving babies in the middle of the night wasn't on their agenda until they heard from Julie Boucher-Horowitz. Boucher-Horowitz is the founder and executive director of the New York Milk Bank, NYMB, a nonprofit in Valhalla that collects breast milk from healthy lactating women and distributes it to hospitals and new parents across the state. Boucher-Horowitz, a nurse practitioner and lactation consultant, says, quote, "Some women don't produce enough milk, especially those who've given birth to premature babies. The best substitute is donor milk, which can be vital to these tiny babies who are at risk of a dangerous inflammation of the intestines called necrotizing enterocolitis. Being fed cow's milk-based formula appears to increase their chance of developing it," end of quote. When NYMB opened in 2016, milk donations were abundant, but the bank had no way to move them in a pinch, say to a hospital that's run out of food and has several hungry newborns to nourish. Then one day, sitting in traffic, Boucher-Horowitz had an epiphany while watching a motorcyclist weave between lanes. She says, quote, "I thought, we should do that to deliver milk in emergencies." End of quote. Boucher-Horowitz found the Sirens online and emailed immediately. When the group's vice president, Jen Bakwial, brought the idea to the club, quote, "They looked at me like, do what?" but the vote was unanimous. Of course we want to help moms and babies, and any excuse to get on the bikes is worth it, end of quote. Thus, the Milk Riders were born. In YMB, texts alerts when pickups and drop-offs are needed. Any available biker can join and can claim the job. The Milk Riders, who refuse payment, even gas money, fetch frozen bottles, including on holidays and in the dead of night, from NYMB, and then ferry them directly to the NICUs and anxious families that need them. One beneficiary was Ariella Frances Diffitt. Born at just 25 weeks, she had critical medical issues, including bilateral brain bleeds and a ruptured lung. When Ariella was finally able to go home to her Bronx apartment 6 months later, her mom, April Vega Diffitt, tried to help her gain weight. April says, quote, "But I couldn't produce enough milk. We tried formula. She would vomit. We tried cow's milk. Ariella was allergic. I panicked," end of quote. That's when Ariella's pediatrician connected April with NYMB, and Baquiel arrived on the scene. April says, quote, "NYMB, Jen, and the Milk Riders saved us," end of quote. The regular transports changed Baquiel's life, too. She says, quote, "I started riding because it's badass not to wear a cape and help babies, but to see this amazing child hold her head up and thrive after three or four deliveries was awesome," end of quote. At first, NYMB relied on Siren's wheels at least three times a week. Today, as the bank trains more NICUs to develop robust stockpiles, the Milk Riders are called into action several times each month. But neither Boucher Horowitz nor Baquiel sees the alliance ending. Boucher Horowitz says, quote, "We've linked the milk bank with vulnerable infants and tattooed women on motorcycles to form this triangle. And that's one of the strongest shapes out there," end of quote. April Vega Diffitt says the Milk Riders would come in and unpack the bottles or play with Ariella while I unpacked. They became family, our angels on motorcycles. And there's a picture here of little Ariella in a blue sundress and a white bow on her hair. And there are pictures of the riders on their bikes in their leather gear and their helmets. And another picture here of one of the riders talking with a mom and a baby. And as we get to the near the end of this third installment, let's step over to the beautiful section of the magazine. And Beauty Talk this month is with Michelle Pfeiffer, the actor now starring in The Mistress of Evil, dishes on perfume, her passion for clean beauty and getting older in a high-def world. Question. You recently lobbied Congress to pass stricter laws that would regulate the ingredients used in cosmetics. What inspired your interest in clean products? And Michelle Pfeiffer says, becoming a mother. You began to look at the world through the eyes of your children, and you just want to protect them. So you start looking at health in a preventative way. Then both my father and my best friend were diagnosed with cancer, and I thought, something has to be going on in the environment. Next question. You've got a new fragrance line that's all about full ingredient transparency. What does that mean? Her answer. I love wearing perfume, but I couldn't feel assured of the safety of the ingredients in anything I could find on the market. A person shouldn't have to constantly choose between quality and safety. You should have both. Next question. What are some of your favorite products? Her answer. I've been using Sadashi skincare for a very long time. I saw that the ingredients were mostly natural and they don't make me break out. I have such reactive skin that if I find something that performs and agrees with me, I stick with it. I haven't changed what I use on my skin in over 10 years. My routine is simple. I cleanse, I moisturize. That's it. Next question. Do you try to use clean products when you're working? And her answer. When I'm in the makeup chair, I just let the artist have her way with me. I've tried asking a few to use clean or organic makeup, and they look at me like I have three heads. I have to have different standards. There are products that I know to be super safe, and if I'm not working and won't be photographed, I'll use those. In terms of makeup, I love the W3II People Mascara. You know, I think that might spell well. W3LL People Mascara. When I'm on film, and God forbid in high def, I need the best performing products. Sadly, I feel like there's still a bit of gap between clean products and effective ones. Question. You've said that getting older in Hollywood can wreak havoc on your psyche. Have you dealt with that, and is it still a struggle? Her answer. The older I've gotten, the easier it's become. You reach a threshold where you're fine with looking good for your age instead of looking young for your age, and I've crossed it. Would I like to look the way I did in my 30s? You bet, but that's not going to happen, and I don't feel the same pressure I once did to do so. It's quite a relief, honestly. And the last question, any advice for a woman who's struggling with body image? And Michelle Pfeiffer's answer. Confidence is all about attitude. How often have you met a person who may not look like a Barbie or Ken doll, but just has something sexy or classy about them? Attractiveness has more to do with the way you feel about yourself and the swagger that can come with that. Michelle's perfume line is called Henry Rose, and her eau de parfum is $120, and it's henryrose.com to find it. And here's what she says. I wanted my fragrance line to be genderless, to smell amazing, of course, and to meet the strict standards of the Environmental Working Group and Cradle to Cradle certification. And the Well People Expressionist Mascara is $22 at credobeauty.com, and she says, I like using this mascara because it doesn't irritate my eyes, which are normally pretty sensitive. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.